Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. It's the signing day show. Cruton might not be as big of a topic among Rice fans as it is in certain corners of the college football world, but it is where everything starts with college football. You know, you got to have the players. So
that is a part of playing the games.
Yeah, it's an important thing for us to cover, and we're excited to break things down for y'all. So basically what we're going to do here is we're going to go, you know, rather than just like list off each prospect and maybe say a couple things about them, we'll take a look at this from the sort of holistic roster construction perspective, because, you know, that's really what dictates the contours of each particular recruiting class for any team is, you know, what are your positions of need? Where do you need more guys? Where do you need fewer guys? You know, how many spots do you have? All those sorts of things that go into recruiting as what it really is, which is roster construction. So we're going to go and kind of go position by position and be like, you know, here are the positions where Rice needs immediate contributors for next year. Here are the ones where they need to build depth to have guys down the line and that sort of thing. So,
yeah, and we've got plenty to talk about. And here's the caveat of sorts is, so technically we just got through the early signing period, not National Signing Day, but maybe Carter, you can remember the numbers here. I think something upwards of 80-85% of the team or of players that have filling classes this cycle have already signed or something like that.
Yeah, I haven't seen final numbers for this year, and I guess they're not technically final. As we record this, it's Friday afternoon, December the 20th, and it is technically the last day today of the early signing period. So some recruits can still sign. The vast majority of them do that are going to sign in the early period do it on the first day, which is Wednesday. But yeah, I think the first year they did it, which was 2018, which was Coach Blumgren's first recruiting class at Rice. The first year they did it, something like 60% of them signed, and it's just been jumping up since then. I want to say it ended up being around 80% this year. So I don't think that was really the intent of this rule. Like, I know it was pushed by guys like Mac Brown when he was at Texas, who really wanted it to be just a thing where it was like the guys you have that are like legacies or that have been committed for a long time and just want to shut down recruiting, get the whole process over with. But what it really has become is this, you know, particularly that first day of the early signing period, really is the actual signing day. And then February, the old day in February, which is still considered National Signing Day, it's the first Wednesday in February, ends up kind of being the late signing day for guys that are left over or that chose to wait. But yeah, it's functionally, this past Wednesday, the 18th, that first day of the early signing period before Christmas is really the official, the big signing day for football these days.
Right. And then you have the interesting wrinkle that now we have the transfer portal. So the majority of recruits are signing in December. And then what you'll see, Rice signed this year, they signed 17 during the early signing period. They signed 17 during the early signing period last year as well, with 25 initial slots for effectively last year. And what we'll probably see them do to close out this class is they kind of look through the transfer portal and said, all right, we filled most of our immediate needs with mostly high school players, and now we can add a couple more instant impact, you know, grad guys and JUCO guys, things like that, to kind of bring in on that last portion. So the remaining pieces that are out there for players to sign, most of the high school guys that are, you know, probably around the 2 to 4 star caliber are locked up and signed somewhere. Then there's a handful of the top prospects that are kind of hanging out and waiting to. I mean, they have, I think, the Under Armour All-American Bowl and a couple things in January. So the top end of the line guys will start to trickle off and be done by actual signing day, and then we'll have some grad guys come in, and Rice will certainly be in the market for some of those guys as well. So the class is not done, but we have enough here that we kind of have a good picture of, you know, the themes and kind of where Rice stands after they've gotten most of the guys they're going to sign in.
Yeah. So we'll start with the two positions, really, that are sort of the most pressing need for Rice. The ones where you need some guys to come in and be ready to play next year. And the big ones here are the offensive line, because you're losing three guys who came in as grad transfers last year and were starters this year. And you're also losing Uzomo Osuji, who's in the transfer portal right now, who was a former starter. So, you know, they've got a decent base of guys who have playing experience over the last couple of seasons. You know, they've got Servin and Baker and Cole Garcia and Isaac Klarkowski and a couple other guys who have gotten spot starts here and there. But they definitely want to bring in a couple guys that are ready to play right away to provide depth, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I think it's the biggest piece that was really lacking is, so in last year's class, Rice didn't sign any tackles. From the high school ranks, rather. They brought in Justin Gooseberry, who ended up staying and being a mainstay at right tackle. But like you mentioned, too, he's ran out of eligibility and is moving on. And so Rice is going to probably try and address that with a couple transfers this go around. But they really needed some guys who could stick around at tackle and be here and develop, like a Clay Servin. And so I think that's if there's a biggest need. You mentioned quarterback with this class. I think finding that franchise left tackle or a couple of them, I think that was something Rice really needed mm-hmm. to do. And I think I really think they did. They answered that bell with two guys, Trey Filippi and Mike Leone, that before their careers at Rice are over should be on an all-conference list of some sort. Which, I mean, I know that's you. Yeah, I mean, every coach and everybody loves their recruiting class when it signs. You know, it's the best ever. Yeah. But
yeah, no one has that signing day press conference and says, like, well, to be honest, we struck out on a lot of our top targets, and I'm not really sure any of these guys we signed can play for us, which is true sometimes, but you know, nobody's gonna go up there and admit that.
Yeah, and aside, as far as the big picture recruiting. I was looking back and kind of going through, because I have my list and log that I've worked through, and Rice has probably talked to, I don't know, maybe 150 guys in this cycle as they're trying to fill it out. The schools that got players that Rice was recruiting, for the most part, I was looking down the list, were, let's see, Clemson and UCLA and where else of that caliber. That when Rice is missing, Florida State, things like that. So I think Rice is doing all right on that front.
Yep, doing okay.
But on the offensive line pieces, I did one hit. So it was Trey Filippi, 6'5", 260. And that's a big man to put on the outside. And Mike Leone, 6'5", 270. These are both guys that look like your prototypical, you know, body type for an offensive lineman. And Rice has done a lot of guys. If they found, you know, the DeBraylon Carrolls of the world that are not getting recruited because they're a little on the short side, or they've gotten some guys that might not be as quick as the other guys, and they've kind of, you know, got around the edges with folks like that who, surprise, still ended up being good college players. These guys fit the bill of they look like college offensive tackles and they're going to play like it.
Yeah, and they're even like, I guess, finding kind of a market of inefficiency there, because, you know, you're looking at guys that are 260 and 270, you know, on 6'5 frames is not huge for college offensive linemen, for tackles. But I think a lot of times it ends up being, first of all, the simple matter is there aren't a whole ton of guys who are 320 pounds who are athletic enough to play Division I football. And second, I think a lot of times you get better results with guys on the offensive line that you bring them in and you get them in a strength program and you can put that weight on, rather than finding guys who are sort of oversized in the like 350 plus range and trying to get them to lose weight. But then that becomes sort of an you know, a challenge for evaluation, because you have to find the guys that project a little better that you think, you know, because they're not maybe the size that they're going to be as juniors or seniors. So you need to be able to kind of project them out a little bit more. So,
yeah. And that's part of where Hans Straub comes into play. And every coach will tell you that his team is as good as his strength and conditioning program. And I think we've seen the return so far with this season, just being able to play four quarters. This is a team that looked tired by the time they got to the second half of the season and the second half of the game last year. They could play four quarters and they can play. I mean, you look at guys like Blaze Aldridge that are running around at full speed for an entire 3-hour game when he's playing 80 snaps. Like that's been played dividend. And that's where I get excited about these two guys, because in a Division I college football program, you never want to have what happened this year with a walk-on true freshman coming in and starting football games with Isaac Klarkowski, when you had the flu and injuries and freak things happen. But you don't want to and in fact, you don't want to play freshmen. What the ideal scenario for these guys and the next waves of offensive linemen is you bring in guys that are 6'5", 270. They don't play their entire freshman year. They add 20 pounds, 25 pounds of muscle, and then they come in as redshirt freshmen the next season, and you're looking at 6'5", 300-pound guys that maybe have gotten in a game or two as redshirts and are now ready to be fixtures for 4 years. And these guys have the projectability to get there.
And then, you know, addressing the more immediate needs, since, you know, hopefully those guys we're talking about are not having to play right away. Rice also brought in, I believe they're both tackles, a pair of transfers, Javon Wolford, a grad transfer from Colgate, and then Adam Sheriff, who comes from JUCO.
Yeah, Wolford, he could probably slide in either. He could play tackle or guard. It's kind of might depend on, you know, you mentioned the freshman tackles not playing right away. I think that you're probably right, at least starting the season, but you know, like Clay Servin getting in about halfway through his freshman year, like these guys are talented enough that if they can get there, I would not be surprised to see them in extended action this year. But I think as far as the transfers coming in, Wolford's going to be the guy that Rice does not hand out starting jobs to transfers. They tell everyone, look, you're going to come here, and if you're better than the guys who are here, you can win the job. But if there was a transfer that's coming in that has to feel pretty good about his chances to start, it's going to be Wolford. Like he's going to be either at right guard or right tackle this season. I'm pretty confident saying that, at least to start out. Adam Sheriff comes from the JUCO ranks. He's actually a two-sport guy, and so he played in the same conference or same district as another Rice commit, Cole Latos, on baseball the past couple of seasons. And he was the all district teams or whatever. So Cole Latos was the all district DH the year after Adam Sheriff was the all district DH in the same district. So both powerful guys that can swing a bat, but they're both two sport guys that haven't really ever focused on college football for a whole year, which is basically what these guys do once you get to college. So Sheriff has a lot of those. He's a bit more experienced and more developed than some of the freshmen, but he has a lot of learning to get to. And so I think that, you know, he might have a leg up on some of the other ones, but there's a lot of guys who were here and played last year. I mean, you mentioned Cole Garcia that might have a step up on him just from being more familiar with Rice's scheme and the things of that ilk.
Yeah. What is his eligibility? Is he like does he have three to play two, or
Sheriff will have, let's see, he will have four to play three.
Okay.
Just 1 year at JUCO right out of high school.
Cool. That's good. Yeah, because you always, you know, with getting JUCOs especially, you know, you don't want to give that spot to a guy if he's only got like 2 years of eligibility, unless you're, you know, sure that he can come in and make an impact as soon as possible. So you know, you got a guy that needs a longer development curve. You want to be able to, you know, you don't want to have that spot on a guy who's not going to be ready to contribute until, like, you know, the end of his senior year or something like that. So it's good that they have a little more time with him.
Yeah, and Rice has proven pretty good at developing and finding guys that fit that projectability method on the JUCO.
Yeah, front. most of the JUCO guys have turned out pretty okay so far.
Yeah.
Rosner and Aldridge and Naeem Smith are, they're fine, you know, just okay. You know, that turned out decent.
Bad to say, I think. And then I think Miles McCord is the other JUCO guy, and he was hurt a little bit this year, and they didn't think that he was really going to crack the field at any point, but he got into a couple games this year, and, you know, he was never brought in to be, you know, that lockdown corner, more of another piece. So
right.
Good track record there. And the last guy on the offensive line that they brought in that we haven't mentioned yet is Braden Nutter at a Tomball Memorial, 6'3", 290 pounds. This is the guy. They brought in a lot of guards last year. This is one of those guys that I'm pretty excited about. As you know, again, you probably hope that you don't have to throw him into the fire this season, but this is a pancake machine. Who his power in the middle of the field is, it's insane and it's fun. And he's one of those guys that him and Play Wyatt and Kalen Griffin. They brought in a couple guys that were committed in February, March, April, very early in the cycle.
Uh-huh.
And they were as vocal and as active bringing more guys in as the coaching staff. So Nutter's is one of those guys that, you know, is arguably as responsible for this recruiting class as some of the people who are getting paid to bring people in. He's a great dude, and he's going to be an impact player.
Right. Yeah. It's always important to identify those guys that are going to be big, you know, program guys, I guess, right away and get them on board as early as possible in a recruiting class. Cause you know, there are all kind of rules and restrictions about, you know, dead periods and when you can see prospects in person and when you can text them and when you can, you know, have in-home visits or officials and stuff like that. So a lot of times you really depend on those other guys in the class who have already made the decision and who were bought in to, you know, do the work on the sides to really convince guys that they to join the class. So it's always good to have those guys in the fold as early as possible.
Yeah, I mean they're tone setters. And the final weekend before the early signing period, Rice had 15 people on campus, 12 commits, and three other targets, one of which was committed elsewhere. And the three uncommitted guys loved the program and what they saw from the coaches, but really the family atmosphere and the commits that were already there. And that was a big part of getting not just one or two, but all three of the uncommitted guys that Rice brought in on the final weekend committed and signed, which is huge.
Yeah.
And one of those, if we're going to hit on that other piece, one of those guys that came in that final weekend and signed on Wednesday was one of the quarterbacks, Michael Collins from TCU.
Yeah. So we'll go over there. And obviously, so, you know, you lose Tom Stewart, who was the starter for most of the back end of the year. So that leaves Rice with basically two contenders currently on the roster for the quarterback position next year, which is, first of all, just not ideal depth to begin with. But, you know, also you're looking at two guys who, a guy who has a really high ceiling in Javonte Johnson and who we saw a lot of, you know, impressive stuff running the ball this year. But, you know, we just don't know how ready he is as a passer. And Wiley Green, who has plenty of starting experience, but also was inconsistent at best this year and didn't really take the step forward that we kind of hoped he might after starting a little bit as a freshman. So if nothing else, you wanted to bring in a little depth and bring in some guys who can compete for the job, who, you know, maybe it is Green or Johnson that ends up winning the job, but, you know, you need capable backups, first of all, and you need guys who are going to compete for that job and push them to really improve. So Rice did a good job of that in getting Mike Collins from TCU and also getting TJ McMahon from a JUCO out in California.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that was interesting to me is following this process was that I'm racking my brain, but it's very uncommon, especially in today's age, to bring in two quarterbacks in a signing class. The programs that, when I think of bringing in two quarterbacks, you think of like Clemson a couple years ago, they brought in he transferred to Northwestern. Where is he now? That five-star.
Oh, Hunter Johnson.
They brought in Hunter Johnson and Chase Bryce, I believe, in the same recruiting class, which was a five-star future frontline starter and a three-star of, hey, look, you know you're coming here and you're probably not going to play. Those are the programs that I can think of that are bringing in multiple quarterbacks in classes. Most of the programs at the group of five level, for sure, and even most power fives that aren't bringing in blue chip after blue chip, it's not super common. And
yeah, it usually when you get that, it's a situation where, because like you generally want to bring in about a quarterback a year, so sometimes you'll have a situation where teams either didn't get a guy or didn't get a guy at kind of the level they wanted one year, and so they bring in to kind of buff the numbers a little. Like Alabama brought in two last year. I mean, it was kind of a weird situation because one of those guys was Tua's little brother, and the other was was Bear Bryant's great grandson. So both had a bit of a connection to the school, but like they had had a bunch of guys transfer out after Jalen Hurts won the job back in 2016. So they were like in Tua's first year, it was like just Jalen and Tua and baby freshman Mac Jones. So
yeah, usually some sort of extenuating circumstance of numbers game, and this is the year,
right.
Which, I mean, Rice was somewhat in that position. I mean, you mentioned ties to famous sports figures. TJ McMahon's older brother, Ryan McMahon, is the second baseman for the Colorado Rockies.
Oh.
So, fun fact. So he's got some athletic bloodlines that are run pretty deep. But on the football field, I think what you'll see from both of these guys is, so first off, Collins is a grad guy, so he's got 1 year. He's doing the following the same path as Stankavage did a couple years back, and then Stewart last year. And then TJ McMahon has 3 years to play. So he'll be one of those guys that, I mean, if you're looking at just rebuilding the depth chart, you got Collins here for 1 year. Then you got potentially three more years of Green, three more years of McMahon. You got four more years of Giovanni Johnson. And then hopefully you're bringing, there's a couple of other guys that they're looking at, and 2021, they really like Wyatt Beagle. I think we've talked about him a little bit, or at least I have on the site. But now you have a situation where you're all of a sudden much deeper and much more better prepared for the future than you were this year or last year. I mean, Wiley Green, you're looking at a guy who was a scout team quarterback at the beginning of the season 2 years ago and started games by the end of the year. Rice does not want to be there. They don't want to be in the place where, oh man, the only healthy quarterback that we trust is even Giovanni Johnson, very talented, true freshman, that they had to rework the entire offense to make sure that he could be as effective as possible. You want a full room where you can go to your backup is somebody who's been there and done that, ideally. And that's kind of where we're getting to.
Yeah, it'll be a much more stable situation. You know, no matter how the depth chart ends up shaking out, once you get into the season, you'll have four guys now who have either been in the program multiple years or who have years of starting experience at above the, or have at least a year of experience above the high school level, or, you know, in Collins's case, have, I don't know how much he's actually played over his career, but he, you know,
so he started four games at TCU a couple years ago and has played in several more.
Yeah. So you have guys who have been there on the college level, and you can go a legit four deep there. I mean, you never want to go to your fourth quarterback in any season, but this puts Rice in a much more stable spot than they have been the last couple seasons at the most important position on the field.
Yeah, and then absolutely, especially with the grad quarterbacks that have come in. So Stankavage, I think he had thrown one college pass before he got to Rice, and then he started probably 7-8 games whenever he was healthy. Then you take a step up to Tom Stewart, who did play a full season and a half-ish over a couple years at Harvard. Now, for the first time, Rice is bringing in somebody who has starting experience at the FBS level for a Power 5 team. Has beaten Power 5 teams as a starting quarterback. Yep. Like, a continued step up in the process. And then we mentioned earlier that the JUCO prowess and the success they've found. TJ McMahon is somebody who he's the kind of guy that has a lot of projectability and could be really, really interesting. His ability to, he just has that it factor of ability to make things happen and extend plays and attack accurately downfield that, you know, Rice has been kind of missing. They've had guys who, and then nothing against the quarterbacks who have played at Rice so far, especially you're looking at guys like Tom Stewart and Stankavage that were capable of going from A to B, but there wasn't that game breaking ability. You were never afraid as the defense when those guys were on the field that they were just going to take over and beat you by themselves. I think McMahon has that gene in him that he was terrorizing the JUCO league, which he should have been with that talent in California. But he's the kind of guy that, you know, don't be surprised. You think of, we brought in the grad guy, he's our guy. Don't be surprised if McMahon wins this job.
Yeah, I will not. Getting those two guys in really, really makes you feel like, and is, I know Collins is going to be here. Is McMahon supposed to be here in the spring?
Yeah, they'll both be early enrollees, as well as Wolford and Sheriff on the offensive line.
Yeah. So having a full quarterback room, not only for the season, but to have all of those guys be able to do a full off season in the program is huge. And puts them in a whole different situation where they've been going into the last two seasons.
It is even both of the grad transfer quarterbacks they brought in, Stewart and Stankavage, they came in June, July in the summer.
Yeah. There is no other position, I think, where there is quite as pressing a need as quarterback and OL. The other one that you could put in this category is probably running back. It's in a slightly different situation because I think as long as he's healthy, they have a guy who they believe can be that the starter, the number one guy in Juma. And when we all know how good he is and the potential he brings to the position. The flip side to that is if he gets hurt, they have some depth on the roster, but, you know, losing Aston Walter, using Charlie Booker, it was Nashawn Ellerbe's last season, right? He was out of
eligibility. That's correct. Feels like he was here for a while, so he is out of eligibility.
Yeah. You know, they have other guys on the roster. They have Juwan King, who was a freshman last year. They have guys like Ari Broussard and Cam Montgomery can play a little running back. And, you know, there are guys, but there's no one else on the roster who has sort of proven it at the college level. So you probably want to have a guy or two who you feel pretty good about being able to come in and at least provide depth, if nothing else, at this position.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, I mean, we talked about the injury concerns at quarterback. I think the injury concerns at running back that there were game. I mean, Nashawn Ellerbe had that big, 63 yard touchdown run against Army. Mm-hmm. And he was only in the first game of the season because both Charlie Booker and Aston Walter, the two starters in front of him, were hurt. And a running back is such a position where you're taking so many blows that you need to have a deep room. Because Ellerbe had a couple other games this season where he was asked to tote the rock more than the 2 to 3 times that you would expect your third running back maybe to get, even in this offense. What Rice didn't answer in this class is there are no more 60-year Walter brothers waiting in the wings. And so I think we might see another a grad guy or a transfer guy come in here, but I think what you do have is Juwan King, the staff really, really likes. And I think the only reason you really didn't see him this year is because those three grad guys that I just mentioned, like they were really good players who had been here and were as familiar with the scheme and system as anybody else. I mean, even Booker coming in, like he had some scored his first touchdown in his last game, but had some big like bowling people over runs. So he was a good piece. So Juwan King, like no lack of confidence in him. The staff really likes him and where he can be a guy that picks up the load and has a Charlie Booker esque, what was probably like 7 to 10 carries a game, something like that. If your starter Juwan's getting 15 to 20, something of that ilk. So I think you'll see both of those two guys be your main guys, but then Kalon Griffin and Kobe Campbell, those are two guys that they have a lot of speed and quickness that are going to, that's the trait that gets you on the field at the Division I level the fastest. Kobe Campbell is can do it all, a kick returner kind of guy, clocked probably somewhere in like the 4.4s, not quite a 4.3 guy, but pretty freaky fast with a, he's one of those guys that we talked a lot this year about Aston Walter. You just give him that one crease and then he's gone and is 30 yards downfield and it doesn't matter how fast he is. Like Campbell's kind of like that, finds the crease, but has that other gear to go a little bit faster. And then Kalon Griffin is a high school quarterback. And there was actually several guys that they brought in this year that were quarterbacks that are just great athletes that they're going to throw them out in a couple other places. And I think you'll find that every college football program in America probably has like, what do you say, like 10 high school quarterbacks on the roster, something like that.
I would be interested to know if anybody's ever run the numbers on that. Because, I mean, there are so many situations where, you know, especially at the small school level, there are a lot of teams that may only have one Division I athlete on their roster. And since the quarterback touches the ball every play, it's the best way for those teams to win games if they just give that guy the ball every time. And he may not be much of a passer, but, you know, if you're 6'2", 200 and run a 4.4 and you're the only guy on either team that can do that,
congratulations, the ball every time. The quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. Alabama just signed a guy like this named Christian Story, who's at a tiny little high school in Alabama and basically just did everything for his team and is a legit Division I athlete, but you know, in the smallest classification of Alabama State high school football, and he was the full-time quarterback. He returned kicks. He was a safety and had like 10 interceptions. So, and every roster in the country has a couple of those guys who were just, they were the only guy of that caliber on the team. So they got the ball on every play, and maybe they're a linebacker, maybe they're a corner or a safety. That happens a lot as you get those guys playing safety. Maybe they're a defensive end or a running back. That happens as well, but a bunch of guys on every roster that have played quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, Rice is all the same. I mean, Juma Ottaviano, Wildcat quarterback extraordinaire. He was a high school quarterback. I mean, lest us never forget All-American, All-Everything punter Jack Fox, high school quarterback. Like, every position on the field. Like, they're just, they're the best athletes, and that's how you win a lot of times at the high school level. And Kalon was just like that. So he had a leg injury this season that I think it cropped up pretty early and got hurt, finished the game, picked up the next week and ran for 150, 160 yards. And then, I think I'm hurt. And then ended up having to have season ending surgery the week after. So playing on half a leg, ran for 150 yards and a couple touchdowns, I think. Like, that's the caliber of athlete this guy is. And I will say that the Rice coaching staff is pretty good at not putting undue pressure on the guys that they recruit, other than saying, you know, we're really excited. I mean, Bloomgren did mention DeBraylon Carroll's name in the same sentence as Aaron Donald last year, and he ended up third team Pro Football Focus freshman. So as a part-time player. So that was probably the furthest they gone. And I told Bloom, he just needs to start speaking into existence if that's what it takes. But Jerry Mack did say, unprompted, I did not say, okay, so who's the guy who's going to get on the field first? But unprompted, he went ahead and said that I think Kalen Griffin's probably the guy who you'll see on the field sooner rather than later. So,
yeah. And running back's always one of those positions where there's an opportunity for a freshman to make an impact. Like, they may not get a ton of carries depending on, you know, because most guys don't come in as first-year running backs with the abilities and, like, blitz protection that they need to have. But, you know, running the ball is running the ball. And so a lot of times there's an opportunity for a guy to make an impact as a ball carrier in his first year.
Yeah, and absolutely. And again, you're talking, there's a lot of scheme things, but then there's just elite speed that you don't need to know. I mean, Zane Knipp was a guy we talked about all last offseason. The only reason we didn't see him this year is because he wasn't healthy. And then once he got healthy, I mean, you saw his only collegiate catch went for 42 yards, picked up a first down just about every time he touched the football. Like, that's the kind of guy that Griffin is.
Right.
So he's going to be a fun toy. And he's not even the three fastest guys that Rice signed in this class. And he's very fast.
Yeah. And so you want to talk about playmakers. We'll get to a guy with one of these. So the next positions I want to talk about are two that are in very similar positions. And it's wide receiver and safety. And I think we can, we'll break down the recruits separately, but I think we can talk about the positions kind of in the same breath, because they're both in a situation where you're going to have two seniors at each position next year that are great players that Rice has depended on a lot. So you don't have a ton of need to bring in instant impact players at those positions, but all four of those guys, and I'm obviously talking about Brad Rosner, Austin Trammell, George Nyquall, and Naeem Smith, all four of those guys are seniors in 2020, so you are going to need to replace all four of them in the 2021 season. And they have guys on the roster now that will be ready to step up by then, probably. But you at least need depth at these positions, you know, that you can get these guys maybe redshirted and have them ready to you know, be the backups in 2021. But these are positions where there's not an immediate need for guys to get playing time, but you are going to need some bodies to build up the depth chart and to begin, you know, training those guys so that they're ready to make an impact down the line.
Yeah, and I think the separation here between wide receiver and safety is, I think what you did see this year is you saw guys like Isaiah Richardson and Desharm Newsome and even some of the freshmen come in at the safety spot. You saw enough guys rotate through the back end of the secondary that I feel pretty confident that it is a two-man show because they're both playing so good. And I mean, especially with you having someone like Prudy, who is arguably one of the best safeties on this team, being relegated to a backup because you have such great play. Like, the safety position as a whole, I feel like the depth there, I feel a lot more comfortable with.
Right.
The wide receiver position, like this year, it was Rosner and it was Trammell and it was nobody else.
Very much a two-man show.
Like, at all. Like, the distribution of targets, like, you saw Jake Bailey get a little bit here and there, and August Pete got a little bit. I mean, Robert French lined up in the slot a couple times at tight end, but he wasn't very involved. I think that's where really the biggest gap was, because you have those guys that you think, okay, maybe somebody's going to step up with wide receiver. And that was our theory at the beginning of the season. And really what happened is not really anybody else stepped up, but Austin Trammell and Brad Rosner went from being, you know, they'll be pretty good to being monsters.
Right.
Which that is great to have for a season, but you can't just have two healthy wide receivers to get to where Rice wants to get.
Right. And Rice was very fortunate that both of those guys stayed healthy all year.
Yeah, I mean, no, I refuse to live in a world where one of the two of those guys would get hurt.
Yeah, would not have not have been great for that depth chart, but Fortunately, they did not have to deal with that. They do have one guy signed at wide receiver through the early signing period, and it's a guy I think we've mentioned before on the podcast, Andrew Mason from Tennessee, who once scored, was it 7 receiving touchdowns in one game?
Oh, yes. You have to qualify receiving because it was also one rushing touchdown. Hey, so yeah, and you are right. We didn't mention him. And if you haven't had the chance yet, I'm sure there will be people tuning in for this recruiting show that hadn't had the chance to listen to some of our previous episodes. Last week, we talked through kind of our postseason superlatives. And one of the things that we talked about was player you're most looking forward to in 2020. And I kind of cheated and went off the active roster and picked Andrew Mason. Because I learned a little wrinkle that Carter, I haven't told you this yet, about Mason and his 8 touchdown game that week. So first off, it was against Pulaski Academy, who's that you mentioned, the school in Arkansas that does not punt. They didn't end up winning the Arkansas State Championship this year. They went 10-2. One of their losses was to Andrew Mason's team because of that 8 touchdown game. I don't think you can score 8 touchdowns and lose. That can't be allowed. But the crazy part,
I mean,
of that,
the quarterback for Washington State this year threw
this
9 touchdowns in a game and lost.
If Mike Leach is involved, the weirdest things are allowed to happen. That's almost a guarantee.
Yeah.
So, but without Mike Leach on the field for either side, so Andrew Mason scores 8 touchdowns. So the story is he wasn't actually supposed to play in that game. He wasn't healthy enough to play in that game. He had a cast on his hand, which I hear hands are important when you're a wide receiver to catch things.
I mean, sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, so he had a cast on his hand, had to convince his coaches to let him play because of how big of a game it was. Went out there and had 8 touchdowns with one hand.
Not bad.
So he might
not
be
bad.
So, and then we talk about elite speed, and I want to give a shout out to the national recruiting model that Rice has adapted. So the first time that Rice saw Andrew Mason was actually at a Duke camp this summer. So Rice hosted, I think, 2 or 3, probably had a couple hundred recruits and players come in to South Maine to get a look at. But this was, they actually found Mason in North Carolina. And they saw him run a 40, and they got Blumgren on the phone, and they said, "Hey, I think we need to offer this guy." So,
and they got him.
Yeah, and you, I'm really excited. And I was talking with Jerry Mack about him, and I said, "So you, 11 offensive signees in the first portion, 6 defensive signees." I said, "So you got some new toys. You want to tell me about them?" And he said, had that little, you know, that the mad scientist, like, when I asked him about Andrew Mason, he just said, "We have a very good plan for him." So I think you're going to see him get used a lot.
And then the one commit they have at safety is Play Wyatt, who is also one of those guys who's been committed for a very long time and who I think has been one of the most active guys kind of on social media promoting this class and stuff. I think he is a guy that they're...
The very first commit.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, so he committed it in February, and something I think is really interesting about Play is he was a 4-year starter on varsity. That doesn't happen in
pretty
high
impressive
school unless you're really, really good, because usually at the high school level the starters are what, 17, 18, 19 year olds that are juniors and seniors. There aren't many 15 and 16 year old, like, don't even have your learner's permit to drive and you're a starting safety.
Yeah,
it doesn't happen very often. You have to be pretty good to do that.
Yeah, you think about the, you know, as much as guys will grow over the course of their college careers. I mean, and you think about the physical difference between, you know, most 15, 16 year old guys and most like 18 year old guy. Like, that's, most guys do a lot of growing and a lot of, you know, like muscle development over those couple of years. So that's, some guys are at 15 are still waiting on those, that last growth spurt and stuff. So,
And the crazy thing about play is, like, I can understand if, you know, maybe you're freaky fast. Maybe you're the Cam Montgomery type that, yeah, you're young, but we'll get you the ball in space. And
right,
they can't, you know, they might not be able to reach down low enough to hit you. But no, like, Wyatt is, he's a ball hawk. He reminds me a lot of how Nyheim Smith and a little bit of Trayshawn Chamberlain, how they play their games. He is at the line of scrimmage, like out of a cannon, and wants to hit dudes. Like, he's grown into his body and has more work to do. But I mean, even at 5'11", 200 pounds, like, he's going to make some plays.
Yeah. Not, just one of those dudes that you kind of.
He's the kind of guy, when, like you talked about, and we kind of broke through the safety spot. I don't think that safety is a huge area of immediate need. So you can kind of say, all right, let's get one guy that we really, really, really like, and we'll be content. Rice might take another safety in this class.
Yeah.
It's possible, but they don't have to. And I think if you end up with one safety and it's play Wyatt, you're really excited.
Yep. I think that mostly does it as far as positions where they're like, they need kind of immediate contributors. As we have said over and over again, they get back basically everybody on defense. That could change a little bit. I know you've reported that Anthony Ekpe is currently in the transfer portal. I guess we'll see whether he ends up staying at Rice or not. So defensive end is maybe a bit more of a need than it was, but they still have plenty of bodies there. They have plenty of guys at, you know, they signed two corners in this class. You can never have enough, you know, athletic corners, particularly in this defense, as much man as they want to play. So your corner is one of those positions where you're always going to be looking to take a couple guys, no matter what situation you're in.
I was just going to say that you're getting to the point where Rice has filled the have to have portion of their depth chart, and now they're at the point where, okay, I don't think Rice has reached on anybody in this signing class. I think that all the guys that they've signed fill a need, but now you're at the point where you can kind of say, all right, we filled our immediate needs. Let's go swing for the fences. And if we don't get this guy, that's okay. But we don't have to worry about making sure that we have a warm body. And
right. It, to put it in like draft terms, it's you've hit on all your needs, and now you're kind of taking best player available, right? It's like, who is, you know, forget depth chart concerns. Like, this guy is really good. You know, we might have five corners that we really like, but here's a guy who is interested in us that we've offered, that wants to commit, and we think he's a really, really good football player, and, you know, who cares about the depth chart? We just want this guy on the team. This is the point where you're at with a lot of these positions right now, which is a great place to be in, where you're not, you know, scrambling for a body that you have to have contribute right away, and you can afford to be selective and, you know, not have to worry about numbers and be like, oh, we can't take a corner because we need, you know, three more linebackers or something like that. And so you can just take the guys who fit your system that you think are good players and that want to be at your school.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is, and when you get to the draft analogy, like, best player available, that's usually at the point where you're like, okay, maybe it's the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh round. We've used all of our best picks, and we're kind of scraping the barrel for someone who kind of looks interesting. Like, in the recruiting game, there is always plenty of players. It's just who gets them. So I think you could argue at these positions, I think if we want to start with the pass rushers, especially potential replacements for Anthony Ekpe, if he does in fact lead, you're looking at, you signed Koletos, who's a 6'5", 270, like NFL measurables with, I mean, you're talking about another 15 pounds, get some muscle on him in the weight room. He's the kind of guy that you should and could be your defensive end for several years. And then the one that I'm most excited about, Jalen Reeves, he's the perfect fit for, like, he is Anthony Ekpe 2.0. And he's the kind of guy that when we talked about DeBraylon Carroll last year of, okay, how has nobody signed this guy yet? That was the feel I got when Rice was recruiting Jalen Reeves the entire time. I was like, this guy is too good to be taking visits in late October and not have signed it or committed anywhere else yet. And, you know, Rice landed him, and he's special. 55 sacks, 100 tackles for a loss in high school. And when you look at the Florida State record books, his name is in there a lot. And Rice gets him for 4 years.
That'll do. And he's not a huge guy. I mean, he's listed at what, like 215 or something like that. But you know, as we've seen, like, in this defense, they will happily play guys who do a lot of sort of hybrid outside linebacker defensive end stuff. I mean, ideally a guy like that will add a little bit more weight to play on the line when he gets to college, but, like, you know, you can be an impact pass rusher at this level, at the roughly the size he's at. And so, you know, getting a guy with that kind of athleticism who has been that productive as a pass rusher, is a really nice addition for this class.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially you're looking at the programs that, and I think this is a healthy benchmark. We've talked about this a little bit, at least on some of the recruiting notes on the site, that Rice is kind of measuring, recruiting is measured against who you beat. And, you know, a couple years ago, especially when Blomgren first got here, like, Rice was, the bar was beating out service academies and group of five schools, which is not super high. And then last year was, okay, we can beat some of the better group of five programs, maybe a power five school. The guys who wanted Jalen Reeves, you're looking at, he had an offer from LSU, Pitt, Syracuse, NC State, basically all up and down the East Coast. This is a Florida kid, and Rice was able to go into Florida. And funny story on him. So he actually called the coaching staff and told them that he wanted to commit before he had ever been on campus. And they had to actually talk him. It was like, that's great. They had to talk him into waiting to get to campus for the first time and said, okay, now you're here. He's like, okay, I still love it. Now can I commit? And then he committed. So made that official. The game had, it was, I'm trying to remember what home game it was, but the game had just ended. He was in there with the coaches and committed that night before the stadium was really even emptied. Like, people were still up in the press box working. And he said, okay, can I make it official yet? And he did. So a lot of guys wanted his services, but he was so excited about the opportunity at Rice. We talk about the hurdles of that high educational barrier and, you know, with the grades and whatnot. But he was the kind of guy that turned down lots of other places because he really believes the message that Blomgren and the staff have been preaching, that you can do things at Rice with a Rice degree that you can't do anywhere else. And he's a crazy good football player.
Yeah. So that's a good combination to have, to get a guy who is that that talented and that sought after, and who, you know, wants that badly to come to your school that the coaching staff actually has to tell him to wait a little bit to commit.
That's hilarious.
You're doing something right when you've got guys that are that enthused about coming into your program.
Yeah, that's the blue blood program of everyone wants you. You have to say wait. Rice isn't quite there yet on the recruiting front, but it's a good place.
Yeah.
And then let's see, go through, I think we can hit a couple now that we've hit the areas of real need. I want to hit on as well. I talked about speed and Rice saying yes, regardless of where you fit. Sean Fresh, he's another guy that he was at one of the camps that Rice hosted this year, and Coach Bloomgren himself actually clocked him at a 4.39, and then had him run it again, and then had him run it again and again, and Rice did not let him leave camp without offering him. So he is all district at running back, all district at cornerback, all district at kick returner. And he just, he's that kind of guy that you put on the field and say, okay, I feel, did you ever, what was that? Trying to remember, like NFL Street or something like that. You hit the turbo button and then nobody can touch you. That's what it looks like. If you go by, especially he has a lot of highlights with him on the offensive side of the ball, with the ball in his hands. If you go turn one of those on, you're just like, he feels like he's a cheat code. And Rice is going to have him out at corner. And I think there's a real possibility that you could be looking at Treshawn Devones and Sean Fresh being two of your top three corners by midpoint next season. And that's a huge step up from where you've been. And that's include like two guys that are really good corners that are already there.
Right. Yeah. You know, we've said it a dozen times on this podcast, but you know, with the kind of scheme that Rice plays on defense, as much as they want to play man coverage on the outside, you know, you need length, you need athleticism, and you need physicality, which is one of my least favorite football words. But
could you define that? Use it in a sentence.
But you need all those. You need some combination of those things. And, you know, Rice isn't going to have access to a lot of, like, there are only so many dudes out there that are 6'2", that can run like gazelles and flip their hips and stay with guys in man-to-man down the field. So what you need is just dudes who are athletes, dudes who are fast and physical. And, you know, you get a guy like Fresh who has that speed and who... a high school running back, I don't think, you know, there are some corners who need to kind of be encouraged to,
he'll hit you
to hit. Yeah. I don't worry about a guy who, played running back in high school being willing to lay the wood out at cornerback. So, being able to, you know, I think it's important for them to identify those guys, maybe who didn't even play a lot of corner in high school. But just find the dudes who are smart and that you trust to learn another position, and that have that athleticism and that hitting ability and that willingness to play physical and jam at the line, and you know, as long as you've got the depth ahead of them and are comfortable with them on them waiting a little bit, which you know is probably, as you've said, may not even be the case for Fresh, but. You know, getting athletes and teaching them to play corner, I think, is going to be a really important paradigm for Rice going forward recruiting for this system. So anytime you can get a guy like him who's, you know, who has those physical traits, but is also, you know, even is an experienced as a corner, I think is a really nice get.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think last year you also brought in Joshua Landrum. He's a bit bigger than Fresh, and he didn't even play much this year. He kind of fits your more typical, maybe. I think he's probably around like 5'11", 170, somewhere around that edge. But Jordan Dunbar, the other guy that Bryce brought in this season, is really kind of your more prototypical, you know, corner, as what you would think of him. It's kind of like the long, lengthy, tall, athletic. Sean has a lot of a burst and speed and can do a lot of things. Dunbar... let's see. He's right here. He's 5'11", 180 pounds. They picked him out of New York from the same high school that they'd already gotten Derek Ferraro a couple years ago, actually. So building up an out-of-state pipeline school by school. So they got some time. But yeah, Dunbar is more the guy that, you know, he might not have as many flash plays as Fresh, not a all-district running back. but has fits all those checks, all those boxes. And you can take a guy like Fresh, who you're like, you're so talented, we want you on the field, when you're also bringing in guys like Dunbar that you can just say, we trust you to go on the field and do your job. And then let's see. I think the only guys that we haven't hit on yet, if we just want to round things out.
Yep.
Garen Hargan at linebacker. Linebacker is probably the deepest spot that Rice has on their roster, especially when you have Blaze Aldridge and Antonio Montero. You have Garrett Grammer, who's already there, and then you have a whole slew of other guys that are probably good enough to be more than rotation players, but they can't crack the field because you have two guys that are. I mean, Blaze was first team all district. I think Montero probably got honorable mentioned. If he didn't, he should have. If not more, yeah. Had a heck of a season as well. Hargan's a, you know, very smart guy and a very good football player. He actually, Rice had a lot of, depend on how you look at bad or good injury luck this season. So they had several guys like Hargan who ended up, you know, tearing his ACL midseason, which is awful. You feel awful for him not going to finish your senior season. The plus is time to heal and get back, and not many other schools are recruiting players who tear their ACLs in their senior year. And so nobody went ahead and stole a Kalen Griffin or Garen Hargan from Rice because they were hurt, because these are guys that they could be playing. And so he tore his ACL during a game, made a hit, tore his ACL, got checked out. And I think it's just the doctors weren't quite sure yet is the extent of the problem, and thought, you know, maybe just a strain. We'll go ahead and give it another go, and we'll see how things sort out. And scooped up a ball that got hit out on a fumble and ran like 65 yards for a touchdown on a torn ACL.
I guess that's all right.
That's pretty good. And then, you know, at that point of the season, you know, could have checked out, said I have my scholarship offer and I can't play. No, he had his crutch under one arm and had a headset on the sideline, and people called him Coach Hargan. And he was helping lead his team as a coach in waiting while he waited for the season to wrap up. So he's a stud. Really excited about him. Another guy that has kind of been a ringleader this class. And then last but not least, Nate Camper. So he's been in the boat for a while now, but kind of guy that flew under the radar. Didn't really start considering the fact that he might play college football at all. Thought he would just go up to a small school in Minnesota and play frisbee. Up until 2 years ago. And no, that's not a joke. That's a true story. And then he had his junior season and started getting phone calls from colleges and was like, oh, I might be good enough to play football. And Mr. Camper, when you are 6'6" and 210 pounds and you can run down the seam as quick as you can, there's a lot of people who are going to want your services. And the thing that I'm most excited about at him, and I think, you know, in layman's terms, there is one tight end position, but there's really two, three, four different variations of tight end.
Right. Yep.
And Rice has a good complement of tight ends that they feel comfortable and, you know, motioning in and out of the backfield, you know, like the Jordan Myers, who's a fullback and a tight end like that. And then there's guys like Yager Bull, where they want to put you as an extension of the offensive line and put you out of the side and move people downfield. They have all of the blocking tight ends covered. And what they really don't have, and, you know, we wondered if Robert French or Jonathan Sanchez would really develop into, was that downfield threat. The tight ends, you know, if you look at, you know, the NFL, you're looking at your Rob Gronkowski's, your Travis Kelce's, the names that you know because they catch the football. That is Nate Camper. He is a tight end that can catch the football and will be used as a receiver, not a blocker. He's got to grow into his body. He's still pretty lanky at 6'6", but give him a year in the weight room and a year in the system. And he's the kind of guy that is a mismatch in the middle of the field. If you can put somebody who's, you know, 6'6" against your 5'11", 6-foot linebackers.
Yeah. I mean, think about, like, as much success as Brad Rosner had this year at 6'5" and, you know, about the same kind of frame, going up over cornerbacks and not even having to jump.
It's not fair.
Just plucking the ball out of the air. Now imagine a guy like that that's, you know, even a little bit taller and is getting one-on-ones against safeties and linebackers because of where he lines up. And the possibilities are pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it's pretty fantastic for Rice that they got to him pretty quickly. And before he really exploded and got it picking up offers or anyone paying attention elsewhere, because this is kind of like 6'6 guys that can run quickly over the middle don't grow on trees. And when they do, they usually don't end up at Rice. So Rice has done a lot to find guys that have the skills and the talent and maybe not necessarily the prototypical traits or body type to get it done. This is a guy who has all of the pieces. He just needs to kind of be taught how to do it at the collegiate level. And, you know, if Rice can figure out how to get him the ball, he's going to be a guy that Rice used Jordan Myers a lot this year in those big key situations. He had a lot of catches on third downs and fourth quarters, 2-minute drives, moving the sticks because they trust him. Rice needs somebody else in the middle they can trust, especially when Austin Trammell does end up graduating.
Yeah. Thought he was going to Minnesota to play Ultimate Frisbee is a great origin
Minnesota
story.
Or was it Michigan? I think I will go double check.
Gotcha.
With him. It was a small same college that I think his mother went to, small school up north.
Gotcha.
Where it snows, and now he's playing D1 football in Texas.
Yeah, that's up there with the guy who in the brief the brief and sad story of the AAF. And is now actually on one of the new XFL rosters. But the guy who played quarterback for the Birmingham Iron is a guy named Luis Perez, who played in JUCO and then in Division II at Texas A&M Commerce, and actually won the Division II equivalent to the Heisman Trophy, but didn't get any D1 attention at either level because he didn't play quarterback at all, I don't think, until like the very end of his high school career. He originally thought that he was going to get into professional bowling and learn to play quarterback from YouTube. So I always enjoy stories like that of guys who just, you know, things change for them rapidly. You have to feel like if Bloom had been at Rice back around when this guy was getting recruited, he, you know, if he's finding guys who expect to play Frisbee in the Midwest, you know, maybe he could have found a professional bowlers learning quarterback from YouTube.
Yeah. And I think that's part, if you were, and I will say this, I think we have, so Rice's recruiting class right now, kind of peeling back or pulling back to a big picture look at it. They entered the early signing period is the number 4 class in Conference USA. And I think there's a couple guys that came in late. I think they're 5th or 6th somewhere now, but easily in the top half. And this is a class that had been, they'd averaged 8 in Conference USA since the recruiting rating started in like 2002, 2003. And that includes time where Conference USA has only had 12 teams in it. And they were still finishing 8th and it have finished below 10 more often than they finished in the top 4. So Rice has not historically been, you know, a recruiting powerhouse. They've had stretches, and this class is currently on pace to be one of the better ones. And what's crazy about that is, first, every player in the class is a 3-star rated player, which is not particularly common, especially at the group of 5 level.
Yeah, no.
And 9 of the 15 9 of the 15 guys that they've pulled in, or whether it's 17, whatever they're at, 9 of the players didn't have ratings at the time that they committed to Rice. So a lot of them had profiles, but the way it really works is once you come to camps and you kind of get picked up on the grid and schools start recruiting you, the recruiting services will kind of build out profiles. And once you get enough traction, they'll go ahead to the to the process of rating you and say, okay, you're a 2-star, you're a 3-star, you're a 4-star, whatever. 9 of the players that Rice signed in this class didn't have stars, not because they weren't 3-star players, but because the services hadn't really picked up enough traction around them to say, oh, I guess we'll rate you. So Rice went out, found players that said, we think you're good enough to play D1 football, and signed them. And then lo and behold, after the fact, 247, the rating services come back and say, okay, this is the 3-star guy. It's not like they're going down the list of, okay, here are the 3-star players in Texas. We want him. No, right. Rice is actually going out, finding good football players. And then the rating services are saying, actually, yeah, you're right. And it's kind of telling that every time Rice signed somebody, the recruiting services came back and said, yes, this is a 3-star player. And then like guys like Sean Fresh, who is, I think, the second highest rated player in this class, didn't have ratings. And I'm not saying that other schools do it, but if you're at a school, I mean, you just look at state schools like Texas and Texas A&M, things like that. They can afford to go down the list and find all the 5-stars. Let's go get them. Like, I'm not saying that they're not recruiting with their eyeballs and just using a chart, but Rice can't do that. Rice has to find talent in other ways, and the staff has done that exceedingly well. And some of the best players in this class were identified by coaches with their eyeballs going out and doing the work, all the way from California to Connecticut to Florida to everywhere in between.
Right. Yeah, and it's, you know, you hear people talk about it, that with, you know, the way recruits, the way their ratings get changed after they commit and depending on what schools they're going to and who's offered them and stuff like that. And, you know, hear people be like, oh, you know, that guy just got a bump because, you know, he committed to Alabama and they wanted him or something, or, you know, he committed to Texas or wherever. To the extent that that does happen, that the ratings are getting based on the offers and the commitments and stuff like that, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? Because the recruiting services, you know,
Alabama wants really good players. Is that what you kind of get at?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just think about it, like, yeah, the recruiting services have these networks of guys who work for them, and so that they can, you know, they depend on, and they do a lot of scouting themselves for the guys that are, you know, ranked in their top, you know, 500 or so prospects. But like, they only have so many resources and they only have so many dudes. So, you know, if you have limited resources and a guy that you didn't have on your board as a recruiting service gets an offer from, you know, the
LSU.
Alabama, LSU, whoever. And you don't know who that guy is, like, well, you may not have known who he is, but Nick Saban's a really good talent evaluator. Ed Ogeron's a really good talent evaluator. Kirby Smart, Dabo Swinney, like, these guys have track records of bringing in great players and knowing what great players look like. And yes, it's on a different sort of part of the scale, but I think it shows a lot about how this staff and their ability to evaluate prospects, that, you know, they find a guy who nobody knows about and the services look at him, and, you know, maybe they don't have the manpower to do a full evaluation, but if the reaction to you offering a guy is, oh, well, that guy must be a pretty good football player if they want him, like, it says a lot about how you are viewed as a talent evaluator, that people give you that respect, that the players you want get these ratings. So I view that as a, like, people talk about that like it's a failure on the part of recruiting services. I mean, it's a smart thing on their part to know which coaching staffs can be trusted to make these evaluations. And if you only have so much manpower and you've got to, you know, fill out you've got to put this stuff out there without the ability to evaluate every single prospect yourself, using coaches who do this for a living as a proxy is a pretty smart way to go about it.
Yeah. And then you mentioned trusting talented coaches who kind of know the recruiting game. There were multiple Power 5 programs in this recruiting cycle that were following what Rice was doing very, very closely. And there were two schools in particular that I can think of that, lo and behold, Rice offered somebody, and that week, this other school offered them. And that happened a couple times with a couple guys. And Rice was able to keep the vast majority of them And there were other coaching staffs that make, you know, Power Five money that were watching what the Rice recruiting staff was doing and kind of cheating, not cheating, but looking off their paper. You know, that kid in high school that did that. There were guys that were doing that because clearly Rice is proven that last year, I think the class finished 11th in Conference USA and didn't get that notoriety. But you had several guys that came in and were game changing, difference making type players. You talk about the JUCO additions of Naeem Smith and Brad Rosner that, you know, oops. Sometimes recruiting services miss on an individual player level. They might be better than the two-star that they were given last year or something like that. But yeah, this year Rice is getting a lot of respect, and not just recruiting services, but other recruiting staffs in the country are taking notices and paying attention to who Rice offers, which is pretty telling.
Yeah. It shows you how highly this coaching staff is viewed by others in their own profession, which I think is a really a pretty positive sign for you know, their abilities and their talent evaluation.
And then they're not done. So Rice signed 17 players. They have two more guys that Jamal Marshall and Brian Hibbert that didn't sign in December, but will be signing in February. Zero concern about either of those guys signing. There is another signing day, so technically people can wait. It is possible. So we'll have those two in February. And then Rice has room this year. The 25 is the number of counters that you get every season. I think there's a good chance that Rice might be able to stretch that this year a little bit. It'll depend on the players and who else is out there to get, but could maybe bump up to 26. We'll have to see. But either way, you're still looking at 7-8 additional spots in this class. And I think you'll see in particular, probably a couple more transfer guys come in over the next couple weeks. I mean, February is only, 7 or 8 weeks away. So there's really not mm-hmm. that much room before we are at this again.
Yeah. Because of the way the season was this year with the two bye weeks and the conference championships ending, you know, a full week into December, the recruiting calendar was pretty compressed this year. So wasn't that long after the end of the season, and we're going to be doing it again in fairly short order. So I think we have thoroughly covered everything we could get from this early signing period. It's pretty exciting. It's nice to be in the, you know, they're finally in a situation where, because with the early signing period, when you bring in a coach in early December, like Bloombrand was in late 2017, you're kind of behind the curve, not only for that first class, but for subsequent classes. Because, you know, when you have to sign the majority of your first class in February, well, the way the calendar works now, everybody else has already moved on to the next one by late January. So. Mm-hmm. You're behind for a couple of classes after you've been brought in now with the way this calendar works. So it's nice to see that, you know, now that they're kind of on the schedule that they want to be with recruiting, that it's really starting to pay dividends. You know, star ratings and rankings aren't the end all be all, but the fact that the class took such a jump from, you know, 11th to 5th this year, I think that's a sign that the staff is in a really good place with where they want to be in terms of the cycle of recruiting.
Yeah, and I think you're going to see, I think at least maybe one or two transfers that come in that get attention, that are more than just, oh, this guy signed there, but other people will notice and will have a pretty big impact on what the final rating is. So there's definitely room for this class to, like you said, stars and rankings are everything, but they're a decent proxy from how other people on the outside are viewing what you're doing. And if you're doing a good job, other people will notice. And so I think this class has room to rise, and I'm particularly excited about what that translates into his terms on the field results.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for us for now. We will see y'all in our next episode, and Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.